Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah! Yeah!
Welcome to a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports, right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive. And today's Drive Time Sports is completely packed. We're going to talk a lot of local sports. We're going to throw in some national sports. A lot to get to. So I say we dive right into it because today is the beginning of high school football season throughout the state of Utah. Busy day here. We're going to have the Emory Spartans for you on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM coming up at 6:30 with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show. Emory Spartan football and KOAL, they just go hand in hand. On our sister station, KRPX 95.3 The Peak, we're kicking off a brand new era. We are going to offer an extension of the coverage. Myself, alongside Vinny Rondinelli, will bring you the play-by-play call beginning at 6:30, also with the Landon's Diesel Service pregame show. So we are going to preview both games coming up here in just a moment during the local sports recap section of the show. That's coming up. Hang tight on that. Also on the show today, we are going to talk some high school golf. The Carbon Dinos played phenomenal golf on Wednesday. They shot a 295 on their home course and have opened up an insane 39-stroke lead. I mean, that's an insane advantage this early in the season. So kudos to the Carbon Dino Golf Squad. Coach Brett Johnson is going to join us on the show. And we're also going to be joined by USU Eastern coach Ammon Bennett, USU Eastern soccer coach, both the men and the women. They have begun the season exhibition contest last week and again this weekend. And next week, it's the start of the season. So we are going to talk to Coach Bennett. And we're going to talk some NFL football. Preseason football's fun. I get it. But at the same time, it's time to start breaking down divisions and conference races. We're going to be joined by a great friend of mine, EJ Christian. Knows his football. He's going to join us. We're going to talk NFC today. We'll talk AFC next week with EJ. Let's dive into the national sports headlines. And really, it's a quiet day outside of some bad news in Major League Baseball. Cleveland Indians, their pitcher Trevor Bauer, one of the leading candidates for the AL Cy Young Award, will be out for 4 to 6 weeks because of a stress fracture in his right leg. Now, he believes he's going to return earlier than the team's timetable. He was hit by Jose Abreu's liner Saturday when they were playing the White Sox. He experienced some soreness and swelling, and an MRI earlier this week revealed the injury. That's a huge blow for the Cleveland Indians, who, let's be honest, if it wasn't for the weak division that they are in, wouldn't even be considered a playoff team, in my opinion. I mean, the division, the Central, the AL Central is bad. I shouldn't say they wouldn't be considered a playoff contender, but they'd be in fourth place in the AL West. Let's take a look at the schedule for Major League Baseball. A lot of action today, and it will all begin right now, actually. The Mets and the Phillies, first pitch has been thrown, and we are underway. New York at Philadelphia. After that, 5 o'clock hour is packed. We get Tampa Bay at Boston. The Yankees will play host to the Blue Jays. The Marlins travel to meet the Washington Nationals. We get the Cubs at the Pirates. The Indians play host to Baltimore. We get the San Francisco Giants on the road to take on the Cincinnati Reds. And the Colorado Rockies take on the Atlanta Braves. 6 o'clock hour tonight, we have the Angels and the Rangers. The White Sox host the Royals. We get the Tigers at Minnesota. And the Brewers will take on the St. Louis Cardinals. Nightcap action, 3 games at 8:10. Houston at Oakland, a huge series there. Charlie Morton on the mound for the Astros. Edwin Jackson will take the ball for the Oakland A's. The Dodgers will travel to meet the Seattle Mariners. That's an interesting game there. Walker Buehler on the mound for the Dodgers. Wade LeBlanc for the Seattle Mariners. And also we get Arizona and San Diego. That's a quick look at everything that's happening right now with the national sports front. Condensed intro to the show because we have a lot to to get to. We're going to be off and rolling in just a moment. It's a Friday edition of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
What you listening to?
Big Sports Radio Guy.
Prepare the water cooler that we may gather around it later and discuss the...
It's time for the Coach's Corner on Drive Time Sports.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM from the Auto Forum Studios. And joining us over the phone right now, we have Coach Brett Johnson of the Carbon Dino Boys Golf Squad, who played lights out yesterday in the second region meet of the season, picking up a big victory at home after firing a team score of 295. Coach, a pleasure to get you on the show today. I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks for having me again.
Absolutely, Coach. And we'll dive right into the score the kids put up yesterday. I mean, a 295. On Wednesday, and I remember in talking to you last week, and you said you expected somewhere along the lines of a 310. That's where you expected the boys to shoot. They shoot a 295, so I'm sure you're just thrilled.
Oh, of course. They exceeded my expectations, for sure. We had a great showing from Brady Gagan, who shot 72. Carson Martinez, who shot 72, and Nick Olson shot his career best 72 yesterday. And then our fourth score was Caden Slavinsky, who shot 79.
Coach, looking across the 3A classification in general, I don't know that you're going to lose too many meets if you have three guys shoot around 72. I mean, that's pretty unique. That's great golf. That's not something we see every day.
Yeah, that's if we could do that during state, we'd definitely be the team to beat, for sure.
What was the biggest difference that you noticed, aside from the fact that the boys played on their home course, something that they're very familiar with? What were some other things that you noticed from this team?
Oh, they kept it simple, you know. They hit the ball in the fairways, they hit their second shot on the green, and then they gave themselves opportunities for birdies and pars instead of, you know, hitting them in the trees or out of bounds or in hazards. They played it very smart yesterday, and it showed. It paid off.
Let's talk about some of the individuals. First, we'll start with Brady Gagan. He was the lead man for you guys last week. Once again, fires a 72 this week, three shots off the overall leader, the Henry kid from Delta, at the top of the individual standings. Once again, a solid performance from Brady. Where did he really excel on Wednesday, Coach?
He excelled on the back nine. So he started on the back nine, and he shot two under on the back nine. And then coming in, he had three bogeys that kind of hurt him. But he just kept on trucking along and put in a good score for us. So I'm very pleased with him.
We did talk about the struggles of Carson Martinez on one particular hole last week. Obviously, when you shoot a 72, you don't have trouble on too many holes. Was his game just 100% improvement, Coach, from week one to week two?
Oh, definitely. He had no big numbers, just played solid all day. I was really impressed with his – he made about a 20, 25-footer for par on his last hole. Just all day he was grinding. You know, never gave up. So,
in order to win a state championship, it seems like you have to have that potent 1-2 punch. Do you feel like you have that with Gagan and Martinez?
Yeah, they're both really solid. They really understand the game. Even if they go out and shoot, you know, have a couple bad holes, they know that they can get them back. And I've been really impressed with them and their steady play.
Is it more just patience? Because I'm sure, especially when you're competing against others on your home course, especially when you give up a stroke in some regard, it may be easy to press and think you have to make it up instantly. So I would assume that patience is probably a virtue with these two.
Oh, definitely. If you get down and just get really down on yourself, then it makes it really difficult to try and press back and get back in the tournament. But if you can just keep that good mentality throughout a round, you're going to find yourself in a good position.
Coach, you did mention Nick Olson also shooting a 72. What was the key for him?
Nick Olson, I like to call him my grinder. He does everything I ask him. You know, he hit the ball probably the best he's hit it his whole career yesterday. his last four holes, I think he was two under. Made a couple clutch birdies right at the end that, honestly, if I was in his position, I would have been a little nervous. And I was really impressed that he finished really well.
So you have three 72s. Caden Slavinsky registers at 79. Where ideally, Coach, should that fourth score be for this team moving forward? Is that about right at a 79?
Yeah. Anywhere from mid-70s to the high 70s is a pretty good round for them. I mean, Caden had two holes where I saw him. He had two doubles, so I decided that I'm just bad luck for him. So I kind of stayed away from him after that, and he played really solid after that. So
I get we're being joined right now by Coach Brett Johnson of the Carbon Dino Boys Golf Squad. Coach, you guys now have a 39-stroke lead following that second region meet victory of the season. That's pretty hefty. I mean, going into this week's meet, you guys were up two strokes, so to take 39 strokes going into week three, I'm sure you're definitely happy with that. But you can't afford to get complacent, I know.
Oh, definitely not. The same thing can happen to us if we just lay back and just think that we're going to cruise on through. We go to Spanish Oaks on Tuesday, so I'm going to make sure my kids know that no lead is safe in golf, that's for sure.
I think the team I'm paying most attention to in the race for the region crown would have to be Delta. I mentioned Jake Henry. Right now he's at the top of the individual leaderboard. I think three strokes ahead of Brady, if I remember right. But Delta also has someone else inside that top four in Braden Nielsen. So I don't want to rule Union out because I know Carter Arnold is also a very good golfer. He's in the top five, top six right now as far as individual scores go. But, Coach, does it appear that this is going to come down between Carbon and Delta?
Yeah, I would say so from watching the kids and kind of understanding what they can shoot and what they have been shooting. I would say it's probably about a two-way race right now.
As far as the individual race goes, I love watching the individual standings throughout a golf season. So Jake, Brady, and Carson, and then there's quite a bit of a drop-off. So there's two Carbon kids going up against one Delta kid. In comparison to Jake, where do Brady and Carson rank with this kid?
Oh, they're really close together. You know, Carson really had an off week, his first week. I wouldn't be surprised if Carson, by the end of this region, when it's over and said and done, that Carson's not fighting for it as well as Brady.
Well, let's talk about the next week's meet. You guys are going to go to Spanish Oaks, as you alluded to. That's the home site of American Leadership. What are some of the things the boys got to be aware of when they go play 18 here?
It's just a little different than our home course. The back nine is a little bit, you got to know where to hit it. And if you do hit it well there, you can score there. So the main thing is getting the ball off the tee into a good position to where you can find a good way to score from there.
Well, Coach, between now and then, I know you guys will be practicing heavily. A lot of confidence, I'm sure. I'm sure that this week's meet was a big confidence builder for the boys, everybody, 1 through 6 on that varsity squad.
Yeah, definitely. I hope that, you know, they don't relax, but I hope they just keep on trucking from here on out.
Definitely. Well, Coach, I appreciate the time once again. Thank you so much for making time for us, and congratulations on protecting that home course. Stellar performance for you and the boys. Thank you.
Thank you. It was fun to watch them yesterday, for sure.
We'll talk again soon, Coach.
All right. Thanks, Jordan.
Again, that's Coach Brett Johnson right here on Drive Time Sports, taking up the time to talk about the performance earlier in the week for the golf team. We have more local sports coming up. When we return, we're going to talk to USU Eastern soccer coach Ammon Bennett. And these local sports segments are starting to ramp up because, well, we're in the middle of August. More Drive Time Sports coming up from the Auto Farm Studios right here on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750, the play-by-play home of the USU Eastern Eagles.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 a.m. I told you we have a lot of local sports to get into, and we're going to continue that right now. The USU Eastern soccer teams, both the men and the women, they've opened up the 2018 year with exhibition play. They have one more weekend of exhibition action, and the next week it starts to count. Joining us right now on the phone to talk a bit about that, we have head coach Ammon Bennett. He runs both the men and the women programs. Coach, a pleasure as always. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Looking forward to it.
Coach, well, let's dive right into it. We start talking about the teams, both the men and the women. You guys traveled on the road to Oregon over the weekend, had a couple of scrimmage games. You have one more scrimmage game coming up this weekend before we actually go into the regular season itself. But let's talk about how the teams performed over the weekend in Oregon.
Yeah, so the women, men and women both played Blue Mountain Community College and Treasure Valley Community College. They're both in Ontario is where we played. You know, we were able to win those games, I guess if you want to call them wins. Really just part of an assessing process to see where we're at. I think we have some really good athletes on the women's side. We're still pretty unorganized. It's early in the year, still trying to figure out some things. But, you know, I think against Blue Valley, we were able to put eight goals in, and against Treasure Valley, three. You know, we took all of our players down there. We have a squad of about 35 girls, so they were able to, all of them played. We were able to get some good looks at the players on where we see them early. So it was good. It was good to get out there and play against somebody other than yourselves. The men, I think we were 3-0 against Blue Mountain and 3-2 against Treasure Valley. Both of those games were largely controlled by us. I got to see a lot of good things. I got to see some bad things, all part of the assessing process. So it was a good trip for us to see what we're good at, maybe not necessarily what we're bad at, because we maybe weren't challenged quite like what we had hoped. But it was a good start. We'll definitely see the challenge part against Westminster, NCAA Division II school, this Saturday. So all of those things will help us to improve and get on the right page.
As far as the exhibition season for you goes, Coach, again, you just mentioned you didn't know if you guys were really that challenged over the weekend or not. I know following the Westminster game, you got Western Wyoming, you got Sheridan, you got Trinidad State. Is that enough time in your eyes to properly prepare for the competition that you guys are going to see once SWAC play kicks off?
No, I probably would say no, it's never enough time. You know, the NJCAA schedule, you know, you can start practice on August 1st. You can start playing official games on the 22nd. So when we play Western Wyoming, that's our official game. So as we look at it, you know, you get three scrimmages underneath you with multiple new players and them trying to learn a new thought process, the techniques and the ideas they're probably familiar with, but obviously different coaches and they're around different players. So it's probably never really enough time. The competition in our league, you know, Salt Lake, Snow, College of Southern Nevada, the top teams, they're tough, and you jump right into it. And if you're still trying to figure out too much going into those games, you're going to struggle, and that's the challenge, to not struggle early, but. So you probably never really have enough time. So you try to figure it out as quick as you can and as best you can. So that's one of the biggest challenges of NJCAA athletics, in my opinion.
Again, we're being joined right now by Coach Ammon Bennett of the USU Eastern men and women's soccer squads. Coach, let's talk about the personnel that you guys have on the field this year. We'll start with the women's squad. Who are some of the big-time players that people are going to definitely take notice of when we go out and we watch this team play, especially some of the returners that you guys have on this year's squad?
Yeah, so, you know, we have a good group of returners that are all all played significant minutes or were even starters last year. You know, all across from the defense to the midfield, you know, Anna Town as an outside back and Ellie Putnam as a center back. And then you go through the midfield with Gabrielle Sainsbury and Sylvie Call up top as forwards with Morgan Hall, McKenna Wiscom, Cammy Gleason. These are all girls that I think if they're at any of the teams in the league, they're starters on those teams. So an advantage to us is to always have some returning players that have learned, have grown, but they have a sense of that their anxiety is different from a new player. So I think we have a really talented group of new of returning players, along with a really talented group of incoming players. Again, across the board, goalkeeper Maya Massey from Pleasant Grove. Morgan Craig and a center mid from Morgan High School, along with an All-State performer, Logan Duran, forward from the same school. You know, Brooke Stoker. There's a whole group of new girls coming in that I think makes us probably as deep as we've been, probably faster than we've been. And again, now it's just a matter of getting them all on the same page. But I think we have a talented group in a very tough league. All of the other schools are going to have the same talent. It just comes down to a little bit of luck, a little bit of timing in the right game, and hopefully we can challenge for and maybe win the regular season and host the tournament here this year.
Let's flip to the men's side of the field, Coach. Same question. I mean, who are some of the big-time players, some of the returners you guys are going to lean on heavily this season?
Yeah, so again, same thing across the board from defense to the midfield and forward. So, Garrett Boston and Connor Woodyett, outside backs that were starters last year, returners. Midfielders in Jojea Quizera, Frank DeBry, Guillermo Hernandez, all starters last year. Matt Clark and Tyler Malin, forwards up top. Pacific Missy. All of these guys were starters or played significant minutes. And so we have really good balance on returning players to fill in, along with a huge incoming class. And, you know, we play a JV schedule. On the men's side, we have almost 60 men here, actually a little more than that, playing soccer. So a lot of talented new guys coming in. Again, getting them all on the same page is always the struggle. They all, you know, they're all good players, and so they come in, and we don't need one individual being the superstar. We got to have 11 guys working together. So we're excited about what we have, but again, we run into that, like we talked earlier, just a time issue. Do we have enough time to get them on the same page to figure out the right pairings, who's the starters, who's the reserves, who's the JV? So that's our challenge right now, but overall, we really like the attitude and the players that we have here right now, so we're excited.
I know that the level of competition that you guys are going to be faced with on the girls' side of the conference, Coach, is going to be stacked. It was last year for the men as well. Is that going to be the same situation this season?
Yeah, it really is. You know, it's interesting. Last year on the men's side, we tied or beat everybody in the league. We had a compliance issue with a kid that cost us some games that just was really unbeknownst to anybody here. You know, we were tied for first place at one weekend. That changed our seating. So we were capable of, and we showed it last year, of beating everybody in the league. Very, very competitive. You know, the women, same thing. You know, we had some formation problems at the beginning of the year. Once we addressed that, and then all of a sudden we became as good as anybody in the league, and we played for the region title. We had some injuries that kind of slowed us up at the end, but it's extremely competitive. You know, when you play those back-to-back games at home, you really gotta hope to win those, and then when you're on the road, you gotta hope for a split, and it just always keeps you in first place. But there's four teams in the league that are extremely competitive, and you just have to be prepared to play hard every game.
Now, Coach, that you're 5 years into this, and that's insane to think about how fast the time has gone by. It's no longer a new program, especially at USU Eastern with some of the other sports that have been added. 5 years into it, is it getting easier for you as a coach, or has the difficulty stayed the same, or has it gotten more difficult, maybe with the pressure and the expectations of the successful seasons that you guys have already had in the past, 5 years?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've done it long enough. I mean, that I understand how to do it. Some subtleties in the NJCAA have changed how you have to approach here. I think the difficult thing in this league is we're the only league in the country that plays these back-to-back league games in soccer. And I understand in other sports you can do that, but soccer, the physicality of it, the demand for cardiovascular changes how you have to coach the team, changes how you have to sub. The signing date was moved up from when it before was in January. Now it's early November. So it changes how you recruit a little bit. Certainly when Salt Lake and Snow came in behind us and added, they draw tremendous talent to those schools. So I don't know that competition for players is any more difficult or harder or less. But you have to be on top of getting that done differently than in the past if we were just here by ourselves. So I don't know. I look at it every year. I get older, but the players stay the same age. So where I still have the energy to do it. And I love doing it. As you do this a long time, you have to make subtle adjustments and changes to how you do it, or you're just going to get behind other teams and other groups. So it's definitely a challenge every year to make adjustments and try to always tweak what you're doing. And we've done a lot of that this year, and we'll see if that pays off for us as the season goes along.
Well, Coach, it is always fun to get you on the show and talk a little bit about the team. Now that the season's off and rolling, I look forward to talking with you once again. Thank you very much for the time, Coach.
You bet. Thanks for calling.
Definitely my pleasure. That's Coach Ammon Bennett of the USU Eastern Soccer Squads. We're going to break one more time. We'll come back, talk NFL football, NFC preview, quick NFC discussion. It's coming up on this Friday edition of Drive Time Sports.
Hey, this is Stephen Curry from the Golden State Warriors, number 30. You listen to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 750 AM.
We're back on Drive Time Sports live from the Auto Farm Studios. We're going to talk NFL football. Do not forget, coming up this season, you will be able to listen to NFL football right here on KOAL every Thursday night. Ian Eagle, he'll bring you the play-by-play call along with Tony Baselli. I'm looking forward to it. The NFL season is right around the corner. Had some preseason games last night. We have more coming up now over the next couple of days. And joining us right now to talk a little bit about the NFL, we have a great friend of mine, EJ Christian. He's part of the Earnestly Speaking Media. We're going to talk about that, all that and more, where you can find more of EJ's work in just a moment. First off, EJ, it's been way too long. Thank you for taking out the time to join us today.
Yeah, it's a long time, very long time. Thanks for having me on the show, man. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Always great to get you on. And it is, like I said, a very busy time of the year. Nonetheless, we have the NFL football season right around the corner. Do you get into preseason football? Because a lot of the times, I tell the listeners this, you have to pay attention to storylines for preseason football to be entertaining, unless it's your team. How do you approach preseason?
That's just it. To me, it's about narratives, period. Like, I don't watch every snap. Like, I'll watch, obviously, I think the only week I'm really somewhat invested in is probably the third week of the next week of the preseason, where it's like they all like, what they call it, dress rehearsal, I guess.
Yeah.
And basically, that's what I'm most invested. But in terms of the actual preseason, I don't. I look. I, it, it's all about the storylines, because in the end of the day, half of those players won't be on the roster anyway. So you look at things about how does a rookie quarterback look, like body language-wise. Like, for example, last week for me, the most interesting thing about week one of the preseason was the fact that I don't care about numbers of Sam Darnold and Baker Mayfield. I wanted to see if they looked the part. I wanted to see if they can withstand pressure from semi-pro to pro players that have been in the league for a while. You know, do they look like they could be a franchise quarterback? That's what I look for more than anything else, body language and whatnot. But overall, to me, the only thing that really matters, at least these 4 weeks, is just the narratives more than anything else.
All right, well, let's talk NFC. That's what we're going to talk about today. Next week, we'll talk AFC. And we'll start with the NFC East. I know this is a division that you are definitely familiar with. And we'll start by talking about a rookie and the New York Giants. The narrative surrounding Saquon Barkley, the hype is extremely real. I mean, it's high. It's at an all-time high for a running back. And I think we saw this gradually build over the last few years. There, for a while, it was not the sexy thing to take a running back in the first, two or three rounds. Okay, and then the Rams changed that with Gurley, and then the Cowboys changed that with Elliott, and then it became the right thing to do, and the Giants grabbed Barkley.
Well, what's happened, too, also, like, prior to probably 3 years ago when with Gurley and Zeke and whatnot, there was ammo that, the running back position was not as useful as it was in years past, and I guess that's starting to turn a little bit now. I mean, it's not like across the board, but certainly a lot of teams still feel like there's a lot to be done there. I mean, you've seen Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell, like Ezekiel Elliott, turn their franchises around, obviously. And I think with the Giants here, too, that it came down to one thing. They had a second pick in the draft. You know, obviously Eli Manning's in the twilight of his career. You know, he's had some rough seasons the last couple of years, so it was a tough decision to make whether to start investing in your future versus getting a running back who really has a very high ceiling. You talk a lot of scouts. Saquon Barkley has a potential to be a top five running back all time. If you hear these scouts, that's how they present him, with his talent and not. And I think the Giants figured they can probably extend Eli's career a couple more years. You've seen Tom Brady, obviously, when healthy, he's playing in his 40s and Drew Brees, whatnot. Eli Manning certainly not hurt much in his career, if at all. He's had the best streak other than Brett Favre and Peyton Manning, in terms of career starts. So they decided to bank on that as opposed to going for a Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen type. So, maybe the Giants fan, obviously I'm invested in this storyline, of course, but I think they're the right thing here. If you have a talent that is potentially, changes your franchise over, you have to take a chance on that. And I think Giants did the right thing and taking a safe one.
You bring up a very interesting point. I don't know what Eli Manning has left in the tank, if anything at all. This is obviously a telling year, but it is the start of the next generation for the Giants. And look, when I look at the NFC East front to back, it's relatively simple. At some point in time, Carson Wentz is going to be healthy. With all that being said, I think the injury to Nick Foles is somewhat meaningless because I believe Wentz will be healthy. I believe his body is going to be able to withstand the grueling 16-game season or 15, 14 games, however many he plays this year. The Eagles are still the cream of the crop in the NFC East.
Yeah.
I have the Giants and the Cowboys at the bottom, and barring a major injury to Nick Foles and Carson Wentz not coming back for a substantial period of time once the season starts, an outside chance for the Redskins with Alex Smith. Your thoughts?
Well, the injury there, Nick Foles, it does open up some question marks. Like, we talk about narratives now. And I just did my solo podcast about 30 minutes ago before I came on here. And I was talking about the fact that maybe the Eagles will be in trouble. And not because they couldn't win the division and all that. Because I think if Wentz is healthy in a reasonable time, if the injury isn't as big a deal as Foles says it doesn't feel like it's going to be going forward, he'll be fine. But if, for some reason, Nick Foles and Carson Wentz do miss are not available for the team for the first 3-4 weeks, that could, I'm saying the word could, be an issue because the NFC this year across the board is very tough. Like, I'm looking at the NFC this year, and I'm saying to myself right now that 10 wins may not be enough. Like, you might need 10 wins and some tiebreakers to get in the playoffs this year. And if the Giants are better this year, which I think they'll be, if the Cowboys are on the radar a little bit, even the Redskins, as much as, you can laugh and dance about it all you want, but Alex Smith is a back quarterback, and I think, the Redskins, they can hang around and get 6 to 9 wins a year. The Eagles can afford to slip up a little bit here. I think this year, being the champions, they're now the target now. I think if Wentz and Foles are out for at least 3 to 4 weeks, that can present some issues moving forward, and it could actually hurt them in the long term.
Outside of that, you like the Eagles in this division, hands down.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think. If we're assuming Foles is, let's assume that the original plan, Foles is available week one. and he gets back sometime, say, week 45. We don't know yet. They're winning 11 games this year, at least 11 games. I think that roster is great. The defense got better. I think, you know, I think that team is just well past the point where they're pretty much like, you know, if you think about it, they reminded me of Seattle from like 4 or 5 years ago. And this team is one of the few teams I think in the NFC that can actually be good for a long time, not just for the short term. I think this team could be great for at least another 3 or 4 years.
Let's move on from the NFC East. The NFC North, I think, is going to be highly competitive, maybe even the most competitive in the NFC. And I say that because as long as Aaron Rodgers is under center in Green Bay, the Packers are a legitimate Super Bowl contender. I think that highly of Aaron Rodgers. The Minnesota Vikings got better on both sides of the football. They have their quarterback now in Kirk Cousins. And I think the Lions are going to be much improved under Matt Patricia. And with that being said, the bottom feeder in this division, the Chicago Bears, I like the direction they are going. I mean, another year under Mitch Trubisky, you're bringing in Nagy, who I think is going to really, he's going to kickstart this offense. I don't think the Bears are going to win more than 4 or 5 games, but at the same time, they're going to be entertaining. To me, EJ, this is the most compelling division in the NFC.
Well, I'm surprised you said that, because I think the South is, in my opinion, like, again. But the North is, it's compelling for one reason, Aaron Rodgers. He's the one guy in that division that could tilt everything on his axis. Like, if Aaron, I've always said this, though. How do you mark a elite quarterback? To me, it's simple. Is your quarterback worth 8 wins a year or more? And to me, that there are maybe only 3 or 4 guys in the league who can say that. Well, Aaron Rodgers is one of the few. And with him healthy, they're literally an 8-18 no matter what, no matter how bad your team is. You know, and with I'm sure with the talent they have, they can find a few more wins. That being said, the Packers are a big question mark for me, though, because you know, he's not getting any younger. Injuries, of course, Aaron Rodgers the last couple of years. You know, they, as you said, the North is very compelling, and the Lions are better. The Vikings got better last year, you know, after the NFC title game, you know. So the Packers are one of those teams where I think they'll still be pretty good, but it will not shock me if they miss the playoffs this year. I'm telling you, the NFC this year is stacked. It is stacked. And to me, I'll say it again, 10 wins may not be enough this year, and the Packers are going to have to get a great start to prove me wrong.
I think it's very simple. If you don't win your division, you run the risk of seriously not making the playoffs with 10 wins. I agree with you there in the NFC, because the key is you have to win your division. Outside of that, if you go down and you look, okay, we just mentioned Philly and Washington. We're talking about 3 teams in the NFC North that I think are legitimate playoff contenders. We'll talk about 3 teams in the NFC South right now, and that's the Panthers, the Buccaneers, and the Saints. Or excuse me, the Panthers, the Saints, and the Falcons. Excuse me, I'll take the Buccaneers out of the equation. But there's 3 teams in the South, again, legitimate playoff contenders.
And all those 3 teams made the playoffs last year, too. All those teams made the playoffs at, I believe, all 11-plus wins. Maybe Atlanta won 10 games. But point is, the South is, to me, like I said, you're saying the North is the most compelling division. I think the South is, because, again, the South, like, if we talk about in terms of top tier, you know, in terms of, you know, most teams who I think are probably guaranteed going to the playoffs, I still think, again, this year, those 3 teams will go back to the playoffs. I think the Panthers, you know, I think Tampa have a huge year. I think the South is still very solid with Matt Ryan and the weapons he has there. Let's hope the Julio Jones thing is not an issue going forward, even though they came to an agreement a couple weeks ago. And, of course, the Saints. We'll see what happens there. But the Saints kind of revamped their offense last year to the point where now they're more balanced, they've got better defense. And the South, to me, the powers of the South, really, to be honest, in terms of, you know, 1 through 4. This is why I think for Green Bay and Minnesota, you know, especially Detroit, you know, if team that was up on the rise, they, you know, 10 wins ain't enough. You better go to a hot start a year, or else you're in trouble with that.
Is Cam Newton a tier one quarterback?
Say that one more time.
Is Cam Newton a tier one quarterback? And what I mean by tier, we were just talking about elite quarterbacks a moment ago, a guy that's worth at least 8 wins. That's how you classify these quarterbacks. Does he fit in that classification?
If your tier is 1 through 8, I say yes. He's definitely a top tier talent. There's no doubt about that. I mean, there's obviously all things he should do more, stay in the pocket, whatnot. But in terms of talent, yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, he's taken some pretty mediocre teams to fairly decent playoff runs. I mean, even going to the Super Bowl a couple years ago with a team that you know, didn't have an elite receiver or whatnot. So I would say I would still consider him a top tier quarterback. If what you say 1 through 8, 1 through 7, he's definitely a top 7, 8 quarterback in the league. I would definitely say that. Obviously, he could get better. I mean, look, we can nitpick all these guys here and there. I mean, look, not everybody's Tom Brady, not everybody's Aaron Rodgers. But Cam Newton, in terms of his value to a team, his value is still very high. You know what I mean? He's, again, you look at quarterbacks who worth eight or more wins, Cam Newton's right in that conversation, a guy that's worth for his team at least eight wins.
Let's move on to the NFC West, last division in the conference. To me, it's a one-pony race. The Rams the Rams are the obvious front runners, as they should be with all the moves they made this offseason if everything gels. But a lot of people still like the San Francisco 49ers. I like Jimmy Garoppolo. I think we have a very small sample size. I think an entire offseason for everyone to get a look at Garoppolo and the unorthodox release and the style that he plays, it's a different ball game. Although I will say that John Lynch is ahead of the curve on where I thought this team would be when he took over as a general manager. Outside of the 49ers, we can't seriously view the Cardinals and Seahawks as legitimate contenders in the NFC West, right?
No. Look, and you're a Rams fan. Obviously, you're excited about this whole thing. I'm not going to say that it reminds me of the Eagles a little bit from 2011, but I sometimes get that vibe that maybe we're overvaluing the Rams a little too much. I expect them to win 12 games this year. I expect them to be great. But sometimes I wonder if all these moves they made this summer, you know, and somehow this does not figure out the Aaron Donald situation yet. You know, is that going to be something that's going to be a problem into the end of the year? Ultimately, I think that this team has good talent there. I think they're well coached. They'll find a way. In terms of Seattle and Arizona, here's the thing with Seattle. It's weird because, like, these rumors, we know all that. But again, we talk about top-tier quarterbacks and who's worth this much wins. Russell Wilson last year proved he's top-tier quarterback. Russell Wilson proved last year that he's worth 8-9 wins a year. Because if I'm not mistaken, the number was, he accounted for, I believe, 31 of the 32 touchdowns they scored last year, some number like that. He was definitely the be-all, end-all for that Seattle offense with a bad O-line.
All he needed to do was get that team to the playoffs, and he would have been my MVP.
Absolutely. And that is the only reason I didn't think he'd be MVP. Otherwise, he would have gotten it. Just one more win, he would have gotten it, an MVP. No doubt about that. He's tier one. He's right there below Brady and Rodgers, in my opinion, on that list. But again, Seattle, a bit of a rebuild right now, too, a backwards rebuild, although they've got an elite quarterback. You know, let's see how their defense looks this year without leading the boom. Let's see how that goes going forward. I have question marks there, too. I don't think Seattle will be as bad as people think they're going to be. I think they'll still be around the 8-8, 9-7 mark. I think they'll be a problem for a lot of teams, but they're clearly not the same team they were 4 or 5 years ago. That is a fact. The Cardinals, again, rebuild. You know, Sam Bradford is the placeholder for now until Josh Rosen gets the keys later in the year or next year. So they'll be bottom three of the West. The Niners, I agree with you. Garoppolo, maybe a little valued. Teams have some on them now. I mean, I think they'll be decent, but I think the Niners are still a year away.
I think I agree with you, I think, on all accounts here. The Rams, I'm optimistic, but I'm still cautious because even though this team reworked that defense completely, a lot of personalities there, I want to see how Sean McVay, how can he manage that many personalities? More talent than anyone in the NFC West, hands down. The Niners are probably number two, maybe by default, based off what we saw the last six games last season. Cardinals, Seahawks, it's a different story. I think we agree on the NFC West all the way around.
Jordan, as a Rams fan, let me ask you this. Doesn't it feel like aren't you a little worried about all the hype? Like, you said it yourself, a lot of personalities there. It feels like the Eagles from 2011, the Dream Team Eagles, that had all these top-tier personalities in different positions, and then just didn't work out. Now, look, I'm not going to say they're going to go 4-12 like that team did. That's not going to happen. But, the expectations versus the actual reality might be skewed a little bit there, don't you think?
It goes across the board. I think that's a universally true concern in any of the four major sports in this country.
Right.
And so, no, I would not be surprised at all. I would say this. The X factor with this team is Wade Phillips. When you have that many personalities, to have someone like Wade Phillips around gives it a different feel.
And I will say this too, and I agree with the Wade thing. But I think year three now, Jared Goff. Let's see now. We saw bad Goff year one. We saw great Goff year two. So let's see now where the reality lies. He's in the middle, a little more to what he was year two. We'll see. Pressure now with Jared Goff. Because now, look, nobody thought Jared Goff be what he was last year. Nobody called that. And now we saw that. And with the added pressure of what they've added to this roster, you know, playing LA and all that, let's see how he handles the pressure now in year three.
Oh, I agree. EJ Christian, EJ, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
They find all my work, you know, my two podcasts, of course, Earth Kingdom Unfiltered and Earth Kingdom Podcast at earthkingdommedia.net. The shows are both on iTunes, on Stitcher Radio, Google Play, all that. And on my written work course, ironspeaking.net, like I just said. On Twitter, at EJ77. Jordan, I'll get you guys on the show very, very soon, by the way, next 2 weeks.
Looking forward to it. Looking forward to it. EJ, great to catch back up with you next Friday. We'll talk AFC.
Absolutely, brother. Thank you.
Out of time on this Friday edition of Drive Time Sports. Do not forget Emory football coming up here at 6:30. Also on our sister station, KRPX 95.3, the Peak, Carbon High School football. Have a terrific weekend. Be safe. I am out.